the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Are you currently unemployed or frustrated in your job search? Why? There are no excuses. You have the power to find a new career and to move into your new dream job. Welcome to Lynn Radice Live. Get a job, no excuses. Lynn and her guests will show you that there are plenty of job resources and pivotal people surrounding you to help you in your job search. Be different. Stand up. Stand out. Let's get hired. Here's your host, Lynn Radice.
Week. The temperature is dropping here in the Northeast. We are all getting ready for Thanksgiving and the traffic's picking up and I'm thrilled to be here. So thank you very much for joining us today. I'm very, very thankful for all of our listeners. I'm also thankful to have a wonderful guest. Today we're very lucky to have Marcel Giacometti. He is the founder, president, CEO, and chairman of Alda International. He's actually grown Alda to a worldwide alternative investment company with over $5 billion in management. Alda actually manages private equity, fund of funds, secondary investments, and co-investments. And he has offices in New York, London, Frankfurt, Hong Kong, Shanghai, and is truly a powerhouse of education. He has an MBA from INSEAD in France, a doctorate in law in Zurich. And welcome, Marcel, and how are you today?
Thank you very much. How are you, Lynn?
I'm doing well. Is it cold where you are?
Freezing. Even more than in Switzerland.
Oh, my goodness. Never a great day. Well, thank you so much for joining us and our wonderful show. Hopefully, we can inspire some people who are interested in getting into the field of finance and talk about some of the challenges and some of the interesting things that are going on today and the trends. So first of all, I guess I'd like to kind of give you the floor a little bit and have you introduce yourself and talk a little bit about how you got into the industry and what interested you about getting into the industry.
It was probably a little bit unusual because I came from a foreign country, Switzerland, and had a very general education as a lawyer, which effectively turned out to be very useful because in finance, you do deal with a lot of different type of transaction contracts, counterparties, and legal background is actually not bad at all. But after business school, I started to work in J.P. Morgan. And with J.P. Morgan, I traveled from Zurich to the United States and basically came to New York in 84. Spent another 5 years in J.P. Morgan, and then I founded an alternative investment company with a German family. And we started to concentrate on you could say a more unusual investment, particularly private equity, which we consider to be an alternative to public equity with, we think, a better risk-return profile. And so eventually that we started 25 years ago and still going strong.
And it sounds like private equity, from what I understand, you know, was kind of a unique concept back then. There weren't as many firms as there are today. Is that correct?
It's becoming more and more popular. When I started off in like 25 years ago, it was still relatively rare. You had like KKR, and then a few other ones coming up. But nowadays, it's a very popular type of investment, very large bank of it. And, you know, it's not that far different from, let's say, acquisition advice. You know, when you look at what type of company it fits into, what other kind of company in a merger, and the private equity investor would buy a company and manage it.
Okay. Well, I guess, you know, we do have a lot of college graduates that are looking to get into the field of finance. And I know it's very, very challenging to get into the field. And so I guess I wanted to ask you a couple of questions as far as, you know, what schools would you consider? I know we've been getting a lot of emails here already. It looks like we have a lot of emails. And so a lot of them are asking, you know, do you recommend certain schools for finance?
You know, it doesn't matter that much what type of school. It's very good if it's a recognizable name in the particular geographic area where you would like to work later on. It always helps if you have some alumni in the same city. They can help you to get connections, also to get interviews. But it doesn't really matter that much where you come from or what kind of university. Maybe just also to say in finance, there are probably two basic types of employment. One is more the operational side, accounting, you know, money wires, stuff like that. And the other one is more the front office side, and that is like relationship banker, selling stuff, selling bonds, and analysis, and advice. And these are quite different types of areas where you can handle. The second area is basically a sales-oriented job, so you need fairly strong interpersonal skills, sales skills. And that's what you should demonstrate if you want to find a job there.
And then we have a lot of questions here. We have a woman named Mary from New Jersey, and she's asking, you know, are internships helpful to get into the finance industry?
It is very typical that you start trying to look for internships in your college years. And quite often, if you like the job, they like you, you get offered a job later on a full-time basis. It happened to me just this year again for several situations. The big problem is to get the internship because nowadays banking has been shrinking and the population of graduates has been growing. So it's been a much, much more difficult market to find internships and also at the end find a full employment.
No, it definitely sounds that way, that it is very, very challenging to get into any type of an internship, let alone something as competitive as the finance field. I guess we have, another person here from New York, actually, and they asked if the GPA really does matter. Do you think that the GPA still matters, or is it more activities, awards, and accomplishments?
I think the GPA matters a little bit for the very first job, and it matters more if you're going for one of the larger record firms, whatever, they're taking more and more standing sections, of course. But in reality, you know, the major part of a banker or a finance guy, is a lot of it has to do with sales. So you have to be very good on interpersonal basis. You need a background that is unusual, memorable. So one of my bosses once told me the most important thing when you want to do a sale is that the guy remembers you. And he may remember you because you were brilliant. He may remember you because you had a SAT score, or maybe because you planned him on IR. He said, really matter that, but you have to be a memorable individual. That is the key if you would try to impress people in interviews.
I gotcha. So the GPA, you know, if you come out of 4.0 and you're not memorable and you're not friendly and you're not award winner in activities, it may not work as well as, you know, someone with a 2.5 who's leader of everything on campus. So yeah, I guess it just depends.
Yeah, if I want to be very honest, most of banking is not exactly rocket science. You know, you have to be obviously reasonably intelligent, but with some exceptions, you don't have to have a mathematics degree or a PhD in mathematics. For someone the fresh treasury side and trading, yes, you need it. But for relationship banker, you know, it's not huge a difference than if you're selling computers or you're selling other complicated products.
It is really a relationship building business, I guess. That's the key as well, is to obviously retain your clients, keep them happy, and then obviously build out with their friends and their relatives and whoever else, I guess, that they know. Is that more of a relationship building business as well?
In many departments, there's so many different types of jobs, it's a little bit difficult to generalize. Yes, if you're selling stocks, you're selling bonds, insurance company or pension funds, absolutely. You know, you have to know what he wants, the buyer, and then you have to find the right product and go to helps. If you know, you go and visit them and have dinner with them, of course.
Okay. As far as this other candidate here, I guess they say they're from Arizona, and they have a quick question. They want to know, what are some great things about being in the finance industry? If you could mention some of the great things that are about, you know, being in your job, what do you think they are?
Again, it depends a little bit on which type of job, but if you look a little bit back at my banking experience in the old days, the fascinating part of it was you're dealing with different type of companies and you help them in all different type of financial services. And that means you have to understand the company. What products they do, how do they sell it, what kind of marketing they have, what are their international activities. You know, even me as a young banker working in Zurich, I went to visit Caterpillar in Peoria. So it can be a very international business. So it has something that touches a lot of different things for marketing, finance, overall economy, international business. So it's a fairly wide field that can be fascinating, I thought.
All different areas of the business, which is true because they're all different. I guess when we come back, I know that, you know, we will be going to a break in a bit, but not right this moment. But when we come back, I definitely want to discuss that a little bit more in depth as far as the differences between, you know, private equity, joint venture, angel investment. You know, a lot of people are, you know, asking those questions and having some specific questions as far as what the definition is of each one of those. And some people are novices, or we have some college grads that are emailing in and they're really not sure of the differences and what to go in and what to major in. So that'll be exciting to go there and, you know, really, you know, harp on that and find out exactly, you know, the benefits of each one, what they may want to target when, you know, they want to get into investment banking versus private equity, versus, you know, what is an angel and what is an angel investor. So there's so many different fields within finance, and you know, some are, you know, obviously just your accounting and your finance jobs as well. So I mean, there's a lot of things within private banking as well that, you know, sometimes people get involved in. But I'm very excited to, you know, go forward with this discussion. I mean, we have, gosh, a lot of emails that are coming in. If indeed we have any fun callers, if you want to get on instead of emails, feel free to give us a call here at 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. And you can also feel free to email me at lynnradicelive@gmail.com. You can be anonymous, so feel free to pick up the phone. I know some people who are currently employed might be a little bit afraid of that. Feel free to jump in and ask your questions about your jobs. So that's not a problem either. So feel free to give us a call at 866-472-5790 or email us at lynnradicelive@gmail.com. We are here today with Marcel Giacometti, and we have lots of discussions here about finance, about private equity, about fund-to-funds company. Not many times do you have the opportunity to sit here and speak with, you know, a chairman of a $5 billion company. So feel free to give us a quick call in. And when we come back, we'll actually be going through this again and talk a lot more. We have a lot more questions to go through, and we'll be talking about some of the trends in the industry as well. And I definitely look forward to coming back. We'll be right back.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Hi, I'm Barry Sloan of Newtek, the Small Business Authority. As a small business owner, you know how difficult getting a bank loan can be. With a simple phone interview, we can pre-qualify you in 48 hours. That's why we're the nation's largest non-bank government-guaranteed lender. So whether you need $5 million or $50,000, you can count on Newtek, the Small Business Authority. Call us at 855-2-THE-SBA or visit us at THESBA.com.
Are you a business innovator, or are you just sitting on the sidelines? Tune in every week for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Host Bonnie D. Graham talks to a cross-section of the movers and shakers who are leading by example. They will share best practices and innovative ideas to keep you thinking and moving along with the best. Join us for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
The future of online TV is here. View exclusive content from your favorite talk radio hosts and new programs that you can't see anywhere else. Visit voiceamerica.tv today.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network. You are listening to Lynn Radice Live.
To reach our show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to lynnradicelive@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hi, and welcome back. This is Lynn Radice, and this is Lynn Radice Live. Today, we are here and have been speaking with Marcel Giacometti, the founder and chairman of Alda International. And we were talking about a lot of different issues about, you know, we had lots of great questions, a lot of great emails coming in. Feel free to give us a call once again at 1-866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. And we're going to continue with some of these emails. They're great questions for people who want to get into the finance field. We have another question here. We have someone from Colorado who asked, what do you think about, is it helpful to go abroad or any of the abroad programs? Are you there, Marcel?
I am.
All right.
I was just wondering how to diplomatically answer that question.
Being that you're from abroad?
So basically, I just have a daughter who is now abroad. And I look a little bit what she's doing here. She has a wonderful life. And it is clearly beneficial from a experience point of view. You see another country, you travel around in Europe. But frankly, from a business point of view, to get the job, I doubt it makes much difference personally.
I don't know, Lynn,
what do you think? You're the headhunter, you should know that.
This is true, I am the headhunter. I would say that, I would look at it as a pro because you're experiencing other cultures and other companies and, it just depends upon, I guess, what you're doing, right? I mean, if you're just traveling, that's one thing. If you're actually, maybe in an internship or you're actually learning, that's another thing. And I do think, the school program probably immerses them and they probably learn differently. And I just see such a huge value add than someone staying here in the U.S. But, I'm not the hiring. So you're the one that's going to be hiring them. So I don't know. I'll defer to you on that.
I think in other industry, like in marketing industry, businesses, it's much more important. And during the career of a marketing person in whatever Unilever or Nestle, they're going to have to live in 3-4 different countries if ever they're going to make a career. And even in banking, eventually, if you move up the scale, getting assigned to another country, that can be very useful. But most of the time, finance is reasonably domestic.
Okay.
And obviously, there's some international M&A and stuff like that and investments, but a large part of the volume is domestic.
Okay. Well, that's different than I expected. We do have another email here. My goodness, we have lots of emails to go through. So we have another person from Arizona, and they asked, is it helpful to know different languages? So should they study languages to get into finance? I would not have thought to do that. So that's an interesting question. What are your thoughts on that?
In general, again, it's nice and pleasant to know different languages, but if you don't really have a very specific job where you have to work in respective countries, the value added is relatively limited. Now, the exception is, let's say, if you live in the United States, it's very useful to speak Spanish, because sooner or later, you will always cross over with a partner, business partners, clients, etc., that are from a Spanish background. So here, Spanish, I think, is very useful. But on the other hand, languages like Germany or German or French, it's much, much more limited because there are not that many connections to the respective countries.
And a lot of the companies don't have as many global contacts, say, the Chinese, or because that's surprising, too, that is, very limited. And you think Spanish still, in the U.S.
Of course, there's a fair amount of international business with China, particularly with Asia, also with Europe. But in the scheme of things, you speak maybe about 1% of the, let's say, financial population that has an international job. So it is not a huge amount, but 1% out of probably a few million is still 100,000 or something like that. So you still have a fair amount of people that do very international activities and where language is an advantage. But there are relatively few major languages you have to know in the world because everybody speaks English, and then most people in Asia, you have to speak Mandarin, and there's not that many other languages that I think are extra terribly useful for business.
Interesting. We have another email here from Tom. We have Tom in New Jersey, and he wants to know, are there certain books or magazines that he should be reading? He's just beginning in the whole finance industry, and he's actually a college junior. And he wants to know, are there any books or magazines that you would find helpful?
There's definitely a very good set of different books which are very educational and useful. It depends, obviously, a little bit what type of business he wants to do. Does he want to go to private banking? Does he want to go to asset management? Does he want to go to merchant acquisitions? So for a junior, I would recommend, you know, you pick, you know, some of the best-selling books in the respective departments to get you a much better feeling of what does it really mean to be a private banker? What does it really mean to invest money and invest money in stocks or in bonds? And how does it work if you invest international? And obviously, like stock investment is a very typical background book, which you can start with and gives you a much better feeling about the investment side.
So are there anything, any associations or things that they should be joining so that they, you know, stand out in the crowd? Would you know
for
of anything that
students?
Would be college-related? Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Yeah, for college students, it's a bit more difficult, but many universities do have financial groups, research groups. Several universities are affiliated with business schools. One of the schools I know, Wake Forest, has both a very good placement group, and they also have an affiliation with a business school. And they have some kind of a Wall Street circle of friends where juniors can call up, ask them for advice, also in vacation go and go visit them and get the much better information of what's going on. In general terms, networking is exceptionally important here. And I think that's what you mentioned, Lynn, also in prior shows, that the networking is one of certainly the key issues here to find out what you want to do and eventually also find the opportunity to get the interview and to get the job.
No, I appreciate that feedback. And it's a tough industry. It's a tough market. To be a college kid, you have a lot of things that you have to add to your resume. So you're correct. I mean, we did discuss things in certain shows. We also discussed other things that you can listen on demand at any time using your resume as a search engine, making sure you have the keywords and search words in there. We also did a lot of active networking in one of the shows, which I definitely think would be helpful as well. And then last week, we actually did a whole show on transitioning and from one thing to another. So there's definitely many online tools available as well that you can look up at voiceamericabusiness.com. And feel free to give us a call. It seems like everybody wants to email us today, but it's 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. And once again, we are here. We have someone live that you can get in touch with who's an expert in the finance field. So as far as, I guess we have another question here as far as a multifamily office. What exactly is a multifamily office? And, that's good for most of us to know because I don't know. If you could tell me a little bit about that.
It usually starts with one very wealthy family that establishes its own investment staff and also service staff, which also advises on how to make trusts and how to manage taxes and so forth. And, simplistically, this is maybe an office where the family fortune is $100 million plus. And then the family wants and says, since we have all these services, they're kind of expensive just for one family. We could add another few families and serve them in our capacity as an advisor. And then you become a multi-family office and have other families that come and join your pool. So, for example, you offer investment advice, you offer structuring advice for trusts, you offer even some private advice, how you educate your children, how you get them involved in your family business and so forth. And there the threshold of the money you need is obviously much smaller. So I would say typically to join a family office with probably 20 million fortune, you're already fairly welcome. So eventually you build up a multi-billion dollar type of company if you're very successful, and some of the people aren't. Then they exchange special ideas. They become specialized in direct investments in venture companies, and that's something that families quite often like a lot because that's the way they make the money themselves in the old days.
Okay. And if we can, I guess, go back to one of the initial questions, and that's what kind of before the break I was saying, is people want you kind of to define the differences between all the different types of financial structures. I guess the other question is, what is, you know, private equity? You know, it sounds basic to me, but some people are questioning exactly what that means. So if we could just define that in kind of an easy way, that would be great.
That's not that easy. private equity is investing in a company, owning shares in a company that is not publicly traded on the stock exchange. You know, Apple, whatever it is, IBM, these are all shares that are publicly traded. You can buy one stock, 10 stocks, or whatever. Private equity invests money into a company that is not owned publicly. So it means it's owned by fewer people. Very often the manager has a very large stake in it. And in that type of a company, you have a much more active influence on the strategy, on the marketing, on the product development, and so forth. So it is a much more long-term investments. Typically, if you invest private equity, you think about 4 or 5 year terms. And you also think about the much more entrepreneurial type of approach. Within private equity, you have a lot of subgroups. You have the angel investor. That's the guy who starts a company almost from zero. You have the venture capitalist, typically. He invests when the company exists, has a few products already on the development, sometimes already finished enough that you can have a first sales. And then on the larger side, you have growth companies. That's maybe companies with $20, $50 million sales that need additional money, again, from private investors to grow the company, go abroad, buy new products, buy new plants. And then you even sometimes buy very large companies. Some of our investments eventually in private equity firms, they bought companies like Domino's Pizza or Burger King. And that's another extreme. These are companies that are very large, sometimes fairly poorly managed. The company or the private equity company believes they can manage it much better with a lot of consultants and a lot of own people they put in there.
Wow.
There's a fairly wide diversity of different type of investments.
So it seems like it's definitely a staged approach. And can people come in, you know, at all levels, an entry level, or they have to be an expert in what they do normally to get into, you know, one to the other?
It depends. If you want to be active involved in a company, you have to know what you do. And you need much more money. You know, the larger the company, more money you need. As an angel investment, you can do investments with $50,000, $100,000. In the venture world, quite often the investments are a few millions. If you growth companies, it's more of around the financing. A growth company, they need $20-30 million. And then if you're very big, you know, you buy the company like Domino's, that costs you probably $1 billion.
Wow.
And you would obviously borrow part of it. Let's say when you buy Domino's, maybe you have $300 million in investments, and maybe you borrow another $700 million from a bank.
And then how do they pick their CEOs? How do they pick their top CEOs? I guess that's the question is, you know, do they track them? Do they watch them? Do they have them grow their business, you know, 10 or 20% each year and then go after them? Or how do they attract CEOs to come to something that they're just launching?
It depends. You know, most of the ideas comes with a person. And as a private equity investor, you kind of hope that the existing management is reasonably good and can grow the company. But in reality, there's so many different stages in the growth of a company that you're going to have to change a lot of the senior management. And this is clearly one of the most difficult part in investment and also in managing a company in general. It's very, very difficult finding good CEOs. So professionals that have been doing this for a long time, they have a lot of friends. They know a lot of people that have done this before. Sometimes they're called serial entrepreneurs. And then you hope, you know, the guy has done it well for 2 or 3 times, so maybe he's going to do it a 4th time as well. And you have a better chance, but it doesn't really work all the time. And then also, you know, the larger you become as a company, you work extensively with executive search people. By the way, anyway, even in our firm, we are only like 60 people. We also work regularly with 2 different search groups when we need somebody.
Uh-huh. And I'm a search person. Did you know that?
Absolutely.
I like search people.
I understand you're the best of the best.
Exactly. No, absolutely. That's very interesting to me that's how they attract them, and they usually bring them with them. Because I know a lot of companies recently have gone through kind of gone public, gone private, back and forth, and they do lose a lot of their management. And I guess that is, you know, they have to look at who's good, who's bad, and who's staying, and who's impacted the business, and then, you know, I guess make their own business out of it. And do they usually have consultants who do that mostly, that, you know, come in and kind of pick the business apart?
Yes, and partially they have them within the own company, or they do hire or whatever, Bain Consulting, Boston McKinsey, and so forth. So it's a combination of different strategies you do, and it depends how big also these different companies are. But hiring people is exceptionally difficult, and I think it's something that most people underestimate and don't spend enough time in it. And very few people also use all the different ways, you know, you can do that. In our situation, for example, for graduates, we put in some notices in, let's say, Columbia University in New York, because we're looking more for New Yorker guys, or we use headhunters. And recently, actually, our human resource people, they start using LinkedIn as well.
Okay, and it looks like we have a caller. We have Monica from Philadelphia. Monica, how are you?
Hi, Lynn. I'm good.
Good. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thanks. I just wanted to get back to, you guys were talking about international, and I'm looking into a program. It's called INSEED, and it's a master's program. I wanted to know, do you need experience to get in? Is that true? And do I need to know a different language?
Wow. Thank you so much for calling. And yes, he's a good guy to ask because he actually went there. But Marcel, I'll let you take this off. Go ahead.
It's actually in the financial industry, it is quite popular to take a MBA later on. And typically you work 2-3 years in a bank to your position, and particularly on the private equity side, many, many of them goes to take a master degree later on. And one of the objectives is in the master's degree, you learn more than only the finance, which you may have known beforehand. You learn much more about accounting. You learn much more about running a public company, about marketing, and also about the international business. And I personally thought that was an extremely useful type of education. Which school you go to, you know, that's very difficult as well. It depends a little bit on your personal interest. If you live in Chicago and want to stay the rest of your life in Chicago, I think it's much better you go to a top domestic school. If you live in California and you're fascinated with doing business with Asia, it's probably much better you take a school that has strong relationship with Asia. For example, INSEAD, who is headquartered outside of Paris, has their own campus in Singapore as well, and therefore can offer you an extensive local education down there as well. So that depends a little bit which directions you want to go eventually on your activities.
Okay, and what about a language? Should you have that background of another language? Or I heard you talking that maybe that's not as important, but maybe for this it is.
Everybody speaks English. In reality, when I went, by the way, I think we were supposed to speak 2 or 3 languages. I think nowadays I don't remember a single business school that requires more than one language. You may have to learn a little bit of the local language, but teaching everything is done in English.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks for calling in tonight.
Thank you for calling in.
And then we have a back-to-back caller here. So we have another caller. We have Jennifer from Boston. Jennifer, how are you?
Hi, Lynn. How are you?
Good. Thanks so much for calling in. We're on the phone with Marcel. Do you have some questions today?
I do. I've been home for about 5 years now. I had a baby who's now 5, and I had a career in investment banking. I'll keep it confidential what the company was. But my question is, I'm wondering what companies hire best talent now, which companies are strong in private equity now, what are the new trends?
I think the trends, they go a little bit also with the economic cycle. When you look at it, what happens now in banking is asset management is on the upswing again. And I think if you remember the statistics correct, in the last 2 years, personal net worth of the United States families increased by something like $10 trillion. And part of it is because the stock market was incredibly strong. So this is one of the markets where there is some movement and some growth in it. On the other part, there's also more acquisitions going on between companies, and there's also definitely some growth in the market. On the private equity side, it's more stable. There's some of the newer firms that still hire a little bit, but a bit more stable. But, for example, Boston has a very large array of different type of companies. They have some excellent investment management firms. They also have some of the best private equity firms. You know, like Bain Capital is in Boston. That is one of the oldest and best firms, but many, many other ones as well. You also have technical type of investments like biotech private equity firms over there.
Mm-hmm.
So Boston is clearly one of the best places for any type of financial business, and also educationally, of course, you have a lot of connections.
Thanks so much, Marcel.
Oh, and thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate it. And make sure, if you want to, go on demand. A lot of the topics that you may be worried about getting back into the field, and congratulations on your child there, you can go online to listen on demand. So there's things about resumes, and there's things about getting back into mm-hmm. the networking, all of that as well. But thank you so much for calling in tonight.
Thanks, Lynn.
Have a great one.
Bye.
Actually, maybe, Linda, one of the comments I would like to make is writing resume is something which is quite difficult, and it makes a big difference. You know, whenever we see somebody and comes by with a resume, it is really important that you get the feeling that this is an unusual individual. You know, some of the most successful people we had were people that were hobby opera singers, for example, or master chess players, or something else that gives, you know, just an additional edge. Because in reality, you know, a lot of the colleges create very, very intelligent and top-notch people. So you try to find something, you know, a little bit unusual, a little bit different in finance. Some people, again, what I said in the beginning, that makes you be remembered by the clients.
I think that's great. I think that's very important to have, you know, things in the interview that make you stand out, being remembered, as you said, whether that's on your resume and also in your interview, to make sure that you shine and take that time to, you know, do something different, be different as well. I know one of the other shows too is how do you build rapport and relationships and, you know, all of that, and how you build rapport with a hiring manager. I mean, some people, you know, gosh, they'd interview with you and they get, you know, kind of humble and get a little nervous, you know, but it's how do you build rapport and how do you find things in common and how do you find, you know, what to talk about? I guess that's another question that we had here, which I thought was pretty interesting, but as far as your bosses, if you could tell us some great things or great tips that your bosses brought to the table and that, you know, basically you learned from that, you know, could help the audience.
You know, it's more, you know, you like people that are charismatic. You like people that have good ideas, have a good leadership skills, and that have also a support of the whole group or the whole team. And it's pretty much the general type of things that people always say in all the books, and it's true in reality. It's very, very important because it's both. You know, when you're selling, you're not selling to the client. You also have to sell yourself internally. So you have to be a proactive person. You have to be a very positive person. It is actually interesting that people are not more positive in a business environment, because this is clearly one of the most rewarded type of attitude, is if you're a positive person.
No, that makes sense. That, you know, attitude drives the experience. I've heard that over and over again. And, you know, the people that kind of dwell on the negative and constantly go to the negative first, it does, you know, come off in all relationships as well as in business. So we all like to be around more positive people. So that's always a good thing as well. How about, you know, maybe a mistake that you made that, you know, in the finance field that you wouldn't want to do again? Is there been anything that you kind of were like, well, you know, I kind of learned from that moment in time? I know I've had a couple myself. So is there anything that you would like to disclose?
You know, the big weakness I had in my years building up the company was that I did not devote enough time to structure, write the personnel policy, and also recruiting. you know, recruiting people is something which is incredibly important. And you have to recruit very good people. You have to train them. And then you also have to find out after 2 years, do they fit in or not? And sometimes they do not fit in. And it is so much better if you discuss with people early on and say, look, this is just the wrong fit because you like to do this and this. We need something else. It's much better we separate earlier instead of sometimes, you know, we kept somebody for 3, 4, 5 years because we thought, oh, maybe it's going to be improving, it's going to get better. In reality, they do not get better. It is much easier and also much less painful if you separate as early as possible. And then we were always very generous and gave people, 6 months to find for the next job. And that, I think, is one of the issues. You always want to do business. You kind of don't spend enough time to really optimize also the internal functioning of the company and hire the best people for every single job, including particularly the supporting job. It's very important to have good IT people, operational people. That's very important. And one tends not to spend enough time for that.
Right. And sometimes a lot of hiring managers I found are really in that mode where they just need to fill the position. I mean, they need a body in that spot and, you know, taking an extra month or two to find the right person, I think you're right, is going to pay off in the long run. So, you know, kind of being meticulous and making sure it fits corporate culture as well as that they are the operator, do the research, get the numbers, get the references, you know, really make sure that they are who they are. You know, I think, you know, a few of my companies always had them put together a business plan. And I love that concept. You know, I mean, you know, tell me what you're going to do and how you're going to do it. And if they don't grab onto that concept, you know, maybe they're not the right fit. But I totally agree with you. Hiring the right people is the only way to change your numbers. It's the only way to change revenue. I mean, just period. You have to have the right team. And, you know, I've seen it over and over. I recruit company, you know, for positions and they spin them. So, you know, I totally agree with that. And also, you know, I recently went to a program where the same thing where they were talking about, you know, the bottom 10%. I mean, is it really worth investing the time and training and really, you know, keeping them on board? Or is it better to, as you said, you know, cut them at a certain point the right way and know that, you know, maybe they're not happy there. Maybe that they, you know, should be in another opportunity where they can excel. And, you know, it's not always a bad thing to be fired or let go from a company. Sometimes it's a good thing for the company. It's also a good thing for the new company where you can use your skills and, you know, and shine. But, you know, I think it was Jack Welch who was saying that as far as the bottom 10% yearly. What are your thoughts on that? Is that a little too strict?
In general terms, I think it's absolutely correct. You know, I'm not sure if it has to be 10% or 5%, but it definitely makes sense because, you know, you're building teams, you cooperate between different departments, and some people just cooperate better with other people than with other ones. So it is much better to find out what is the optimal fit, what is the most efficient and productive teamwork, and if some people doesn't fit in, doesn't mean they would not fit in perfectly into another company doing pretty much the same thing as well. And again, if they don't fit in, they usually will not fit in after 5 years either. So I think one should separate much sooner, and I'm pretty convinced that both parties will be much happier with that.
No, and I've heard that over and over from many different hiring managers. So it's interesting, you know, you have the same philosophy and you've been very successful at what you've done in building teams and building business and building a huge business. So, you know, it is interesting. I think the more successful leaders have come to me and said that a lot. We will be going to break shortly, and this has been a great show so far, and thank you so much for all these emails, the callers. We've had a great show so far. Please feel free to give us a call at 1-866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. We will be going to break shortly, and we will be back with Marcel Giacometti.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
Hi, I'm Barry Sloan of Newtek, the Small Business Authority. As a small business owner, you know how difficult getting a bank loan can be. With a simple phone interview, we can pre-qualify you in 48 hours. That's why we're the nation's largest non-bank government guaranteed lender. So whether you need $5 million or $50,000, you can count on NewTek, the Small Business Authority. Call us at 855-2-THE-SBA or visit us at THESBA.com.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Does your business, like many, face obstacles to becoming successful? Would you love to have an open forum of entrepreneurial ideas and best practices brought to you each week? Tune in for The Second Stage with hosts Brendan Anderson and Jeffrey Kadlec. We'll spotlight entrepreneurs and growing companies that are creating a vibrant economic base, as well as addressing some of the obstacles that could be standing in the way of your success. Listen Mondays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. You are listening to Lynn Radice Live. To reach our show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to LynnRadiceLive@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
My goodness, this has been a busy show, and thank you. Welcome back. This is Lynn Radice, and this is Lynn Radice Live. We have had an extensive show so far with Marcel Giacometti, the founder and president of Auda International, talking all about the finance field, talking all about college graduates, talking about ways to get in and out of jobs, lots and lots of information. We have a ton of more emails from LynnRadiceLive@gmail.com. Feel free to email me there as well. And we are back in, and it looks like, gosh, we've got a couple of callers on hold. But first, we wanted to go back a little bit. We had talked all about the differences between hedge funds, about private equity, joint venture, and angel investment. And I wanted to find out a little bit more about the hedge fund industry. I don't think we brought that up. And, I know a lot of people know that word, but don't know exactly what that means. So if we could address one there.
The original hedge fund strategy was reasonably simplistic. It's basically you evaluate companies and decide one is good and one is bad. For example, you say Apple is a great computer company and IBM is not a good company. So you take $100 and you buy $100 worth of stock in Apple and you sell $100 worth of stocks in IBM. And then it doesn't really matter if the stock market goes up and down, because what you're hoping is that, relatively speaking, Apple will do better than IBM. So if both goes up, maybe Apple goes down to 50 and IBM to 110, the 40 difference is what you earn. Or vice versa, if the stock market goes down, Apple goes down only to maybe 10 and IBM goes down 40. So basically you invest into the relative strength of the company, and it's heavily analytical. So that was the origin of hedge fund investments. In the end, it became much wider, much more complicated. For example, you buy oil service businesses, but you're selling car services. Or you're investing in pounds because you think the British economy is much stronger, and you sell the Japanese yen because the economy is doing much poorer. And then it becomes more and more and more complicated. So nowadays, hedge funds describes virtually any type of more complicated investment strategy in public instruments, which is not a straight long and short of buying or selling stocks or bonds. Everything else is virtually now hedge funds. Not sure if that makes sense.
No, that's okay. I know that some people had talked about film financing at one point as a hedge fund investment. Does that make sense with the tax credits and that type of thing? Have you ever done that? I have no idea.
No, in principle, film financing has nothing to do with hedge funds. Hedge funds, you always try to do something in relationship with something else. Film financing is more a unusual or alternative type of investments, you could call it. It's much closer to private equity, actually.
Ah, okay. So that's a lot different. Okay. I didn't understand that either. So all these questions, my goodness.
You invest in a private company, a private venture. It's not a public instrument. Hedge funds only buy publicly traded stocks, bonds, commodities, or whatever.
And I guess, you know, here's a question from April, and she mentions, you know, about the challenges and fraud in the industry. You know, how does that happen? Well, I guess it's just lack of supervision. But, you know, what do you think about that as, you know, specific to the hedge fund industry?
You know, I think it's probably basic human greediness. There's a certain percentage of humans which don't really know where is the limit between what is ethically or legally allowed, and they try, they think they can get away with it. In reality, it's a very, very small percentage. However, some of them have been doing very, very crazy and egregious things, particularly like insider trading and so on. Some people have done really very bad things, and hopefully most of them will get caught.
But, seems, you know, that almost, a lot have gotten caught.
It's same in different industries as well. You know, you have the same things in whatever it is, in manufacturing and marketing. You know, you change the product consistency with something cheap and illegal and maybe even poisonous. Or you don't pay attention how you manufacture your eggs and so on. So some people, they try to get a shortcut and make more money.
I gotcha. No, that makes a lot of sense.
So much bigger that I think the headlines gets much bigger.
No, it's true. And then it gets a lot of press. And then you're right. I mean, and the big ones, it does follow a lot of press. So I guess that's a challenge. I guess, you know, if you had, you know, kids in college and they wanted to get into finance, and, you know, what would be like a last piece of advice? What is most important? What would you tell someone who's, you know, maybe a high school person who's going to go major in something? What would you recommend to come to your company? What would you say?
You know, you have to speak with as many people as possible in the respective companies, finance company, banks, to just get a much better information base of what's going on. And particularly if you at universities, you know, you have to connect with all your friends. Fraternities, for example, can be excellent places to connect, because fraternities have alumni, they're going to be working anywhere, and you can contact them very easily, and they tend to be very productive. But also placement offices sometimes do excellent job. And then you also have to use all your friends and, you know, call them up, go and visit them. And it takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. And that's the bad part of it. It takes a lot of legwork. You know, you're going to have to arrange dozens of meetings with the friends of a friend, whoever is willing to see you. Then you start talking with them, and eventually both you start to know more what you really like to, but then more and more people see you and then say, this is kind of an intelligent guy, and I think he would probably fit well into this and this type of companies, and then people start making reference calls for you.
No, that makes a lot of sense. How about as far as the career development department at a university? You know, what has been your experience or your exposure? I'm not even sure, but, you know, have you found some that you like and some that you don't? I mean, what's important, do you think, in the career development department?
You know, they start from a very simplistic base as to how to write the resume to having connection with certain business leaders in respective industries where they make introduction. And different universities have different specialties. You know, some people are very good in accounting, and they have relationship with 100 top accounting firms that regularly post their job openings at the university web pages, and people can look at them and find jobs for them. So some universities do an excellent job. Some other universities are probably a bit behind with it. But, you know, you have to find out, dependingly where you are, how good are they in the respective field I want to be. They may be fantastic for accounting, but they may be miserable if you're a dancer. So you have to find out a little bit how you network in the respective industry where you like to go.
No, it sounds that makes a lot of sense. And I know that, you know, both the career development departments at universities and career development departments, obviously in high school, are essential. And I think, you know, it's only as good as the talent in there as well. So sometimes, you know, the directors are all about the careers and doing extremely well, and then sometimes not as much. So, you know, I think that's very important when you're going and you're applying to schools to really find out about their career development, to find out about their placement ratio, to find out about the companies that come on campus. I mean, these are all questions, as well as, you know, do I want to go to school and I like the fraternities? I think that, you know, make a lot of sense. And once again, you know, we have done a few shows. You can feel free to go listen on demand, not a problem whatsoever. And we've had a wonderful show today. I know, Marcel, I really appreciate you coming on today. I think this has been extremely helpful to a lot of people in the finance industry, and as well as college graduates, as well as a lot of the audience who've called in and emailed in. This has been a very, very helpful and informative show. Thank you so much for coming in and calling in today and spending some time with us and talking about the trends in the finance industry. It's been very helpful to me to understand a lot of these terms and technologies. But thank you very much. And thank you to our audience today. Next week is going to be exciting. It's going to be the day before Thanksgiving. So we will be back the day before Thanksgiving. And hopefully we have lots of stories about Thanksgiving for next week. And we will talk to you soon. We'll be back next week. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Lynn Radice Live. Lynn will be back next Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and 5 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. We hope you'll join us then.